Bill talked with me a week or so ago about the possibility of sharing with you while I was here, and we kind of let it drop, but I had some thoughts that God had been speaking to me about, and so I thought, well, if Bill wants me to follow through on that, well, I will, and so this morning he mentioned it, so here I am. But you know, the Hebrews celebrated the Sabbath from Friday night at sundown till Saturday night at sundown, and so the Jewish day was from sundown to sundown. And it always bothers me on Christmas Day for them to have been singing Christmas carols and playing Christmas music all the week before, but on Christmas afternoon about 2 o'clock they stop the music and start playing the secular stuff again. And that's always a disappointment to me, and I kind of like to dwell all day on something. And Bill started this morning with a tremendous message on motherhood, on mothers. And I just want to pick up there tonight. We've got about an hour or so before sundown. Let's get another pass over the runway to mothers. And you know, the interesting thing was that God spoke to me this past week from the very same book that Bill spoke from this morning. He took some thoughts on motherhood from Ruth, and God's been speaking to me on motherhood from Naomi. So let's turn to the book of, this will be Ruth Day, okay? Only tonight we'll talk about Naomi as a mother. I'm just going to sort of run through this book, and every so often we'll just stop and drill an oil well into this rich book that's so beautiful at such a black time. You know, I went to a marriage conference one time in which they were trying to teach us to communicate with our mates. And they said you ought to get up someday and express to your mate, say, you know, I feel kind of orange today. And then explain why you feel orange. Or, well, today I feel yellow, so you color today yellow by the way you feel. Well, you know, when you look back through the Old Testament, and if you were to color the book of Judges, I always think of black. There's two main phrases that appear over and over in the book of Judges, and it's one is there was no king at that time in Israel. And secondly, every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And if there ever was a time in history when we could say we're living almost in the time of the judges, it would be today. Men have abdicated from the home. They've sold their soul in order to have the boat and the place on the lake and the third and fourth car. And men are not characteristically staying at home and being the king to govern their area of responsibility. Even in the political realm, men seem to be politicians and no longer statesmen. Where do you have a man that'll stand up for right? He'll pronounce judgment against sin. He'll speak the truth. He'll speak it in love, but he'll speak the truth. And in a very real sense today, we live in the book of Judges. And the book of Ruth, it's almost like throwing the window open and a fresh breath of air coming in to have read through the book of Judges, because the longer you read in that book of 21 chapters, the heavier you get. In fact, you get to the last four chapters and it's hard to even understand. It is so degraded and so debasing, the things they were doing. And the book of Ruth starts this way. Now, it came about in the days when the judges governed. And by the way, they didn't always govern. It's just when Israel got so low and the pain got so heavy over their sin, they cried out to God, and God in His mercy sent somebody to deliver. But what you notice is that after the first one or two, they never delivered spiritually. It was always delivering politically. And by the way, that is one of the least of God's blessings, to deliver us politically. Boy, how we need to be delivered from ourselves, from sin, from the devil, from the world. But it says it came about in the days when judges governed that there was a famine in the land. And by the way, that's one way God gets our attention. Takes away your money. Takes away your health. He takes away things that are meaningful to you to try to get your attention. Not to punish you, but to discipline you if you're one of His children. And characteristically, all the way through the Old Testament, God got people's attention by famine. And that's what God was trying to do. Now, there was a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah, and he went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. And they, Mahlon and Chilion, took for themselves Moabite women as wives. And the name of one was Orpah, and the other was Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Then, lo and behold, not only did she lose Elimelech, but Mahlon and Chilion also died. And the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. Now, the first thing tonight that I want us to look at and to try to feel what happened here. This mother, Naomi, was a mother who suffered. And you know, suffering comes to the righteous as well as the wicked. We may be Christians, we may be walking in the way of the Lord, but if America keeps going down, there's going to come the day when we Christians suffer with the unrighteous. Corporately, we're going to be under judgment. When I think of the millions and millions of babies that are aborted, I think what Hitler did in Germany is a drop in the bucket to the judgment that's going to be on America. Numbers 35:33 says that the only way that blood, the shedding of blood, will be expiated is by the blood of Him who shed it. And I just think that today we are standing under the judgment of God. This suffering came to one who, as far as we know, they weren't unrighteous people. They were hungry people. They ran out of places to buy bread. And they went over into the land of the Moabites, and the Moabites were the people who descended from the oldest daughter of Lot by incest with their father. That's hardly a way to begin a race. In fact, the Moabites were so wicked that because they mistreated Israel and wouldn't give them bread and water when they were coming from Egypt to the Promised Land, that God said no Moabite will stand in the temple to the 10th generation. And here these righteous people, these Israelites, are having to go over to a pagan land to find food. And they get over there, and what happens but their two sons fall in love with pagan women. And some of you out here in the audience know the suffering that goes on in the heart of a mother and father when your Christian son or daughter falls in love with somebody that doesn't share a common faith in Jesus Christ. Boy, that is suffering of the deepest, deepest way. Paul tells us to not be united and joined together with unbelievers. But Naomi had to suffer in that way. And then her husband died. And then one day the word came that one of her sons was sick. And he died. And then the other one died. And you know, not only do the righteous suffer, but suffering comes in waves. Have you ever had the devil just move in like a UPS truck up to your door, drop off one box and drive away? I'm telling you, I've noticed in my life when the devil hits, boy, get the other arm up too, because it's going to come just like this. You're going to have bang, bang, bang. One of my dear friends up in Colorado, his son-in-law 2 weeks ago last Sunday, fell 60 feet and hit a boulder right with his head. Smashed his whole face, and they thought they would lose him. It looks like he's going to live. He may be blind the rest of his life, and the family has been living in that hospital for the last 2 weeks, day and night. And then 4 days ago, the husband gets the word that his 91-year-old father, suspecting that he had cancer, went out in the backyard one night and hung himself. And it just hits. It just hits. He said to me on the phone, he said, "Jim, I didn't think I could take any more when Toby fell." And then I get this word, and he says, "I'm just numb. I'm just numb." And suffering comes to the righteous, and it comes in series. And notice that it says here, "And they dwelt there 10 years. It just seems to be drawn out until sometimes God just strips you of everything that's meaningful to you. Now, you know, that's a very lonely time when you suffer like that. But you know, I really believe that some of the most suffering people today in America are mothers. Because children are unpredictable. We passed a beautiful lawn today. It was gorgeous. And one of the people in the car remarked, "You know, a lot of fathers give themselves to keeping lawns impeccable. And they cop out in raising kids because lawns are very predictable. You know, you fertilize and you water and you can pretty much predict what you're going to get. But kids go through sicknesses, they go through pain, they go through times of rebellion, and you just, mothers, you see, we dads go out and we develop a career. We go out and preach and we go out and bring the paycheck home. But mom's there day after day taking those kids through. You know, it takes tremendous faith to be a mother. Because I go work and I get that paycheck every 15 days. But a mother works for 18, 20, 25 years before she begins to really get the payoff. And then even then, sometimes she doesn't get it." I'm reminded of a woman in our church down in southwestern Oklahoma. This woman used to come and sit on the back row, and she wore sunglasses and her face was horribly scarred. And I asked my mother one day, I said, "Mom, how did Mrs. So-and-so get scarred like that?" And she says, "Well, honey, when her oldest boy, who by this time was a very handsome, really handsome, blonde-headed, athletic-type young man there in the high school, when that boy was just a baby in her home, she went out to hang up the laundry one day, and she turned around and looked, and the house was just engulfed in flame. And she ran into that house and wrapped that baby in a wet blanket and brought it out and saved his life. He was not burned even one square centimeter, but her whole body was burned." And I said, "Mom, you know, I bet that boy, every time he looks at his mother, just thanks God for the sacrifice she made. That she became scarred, that he was even alive." And Mother looked at me, and she looked very pathetic, and she said, "Jim, that boy has brought tremendous heartache to the hearts of his mother and father. Ingratitude. Suffering." I'm reminded of a mother over that was our neighbor in Nairobi. Her daughter had just graduated from Rift Valley Academy, a missionary school out there in Kenya. And she went back and went to college and married a wonderful missionary kid that had also graduated from the same school. And they had just graduated from college and had taken their first church. And she went down to type a bulletin early on Sunday morning. And later her husband came and found the typewriter on, but couldn't find her. Thought she was in the restroom. Sunday school time came, still couldn't find her. Church came, he began to panic. Went in and looked in the church office and found her eyeglasses over behind the door with one of the lens broken. And to this day, 17 years later, they've never found that girl. And we lived right next door to that family during all those weeks and months that followed her disappearance. And we saw the lines in her face and the suffering that she went through. And she invited us up to dinner one night, and she looked at Jerry and me and she said, "Jim and Jerry," she said, "if it weren't for the prayers of God's people, I couldn't make it. I couldn't make it." You know, mothers do a lot of suffering. My mother suffered. I look back at what I put my mother through. Some of it voluntary, just irresponsible on my part, being unthoughtful, ungrateful. Some of it was due to my stupidity, not voluntarily, but just stupidity. Like the Sunday afternoon, I was showing out for some girls and rode my bike around the corner. We lived out the edge of town with a wheat field out there. And I went around that corner as fast as I could on that bike and met a car coming 60 miles an hour head on. That car hit me, threw me over out into the wheat field, and I woke up 10 hours later in the hospital. My mother went through tremendous agony. A few weeks later, she called me in and decided, enough of this church stuff, I'm going to witness to him. I calculated one time that by the time I was 12 years old, I'd attended over 3,000 meetings in my church. At that point, I became a Christian. But it was due to my mom and some godly Sunday school teachers praying for me. But mom suffered through a lot of agony, a lot of rebellion, in order to help me. I was sitting in a prayer meeting in my church during my junior year in high school. I'd already been a Christian 4 years. Had already given God control of my life and told him that if he wanted me to be a medical missionary to Africa, I'd go. And my mother stood and told how when I was 23 months old, I came down with bronchial pneumonia in the days when pneumonia was a killer of children. And they didn't have the wonder drugs, and we lived in this little two-room house in the panhandle of Texas. And the doctor came out and said I was already turning blue from lack of oxygen. And he said, I'll do everything I can to save Jim, but you better pray because I don't think there's any hope. And so my mother and my father and my maternal grandmother knelt. And they knelt in desperation because my mother had already lost her first baby, stillborn. And now she was about to lose her second. And that night, Mom testified how that night, kneeling in that little room, she said, God, if you'll save his life, you can have him. And that explained a lot to me. And you know, mothers, if you're suffering, the devil comes and tells you that God hasn't treated you right and God isn't fair. But you know, God never uses suffering in the lives of his children without the purpose of making you into something beautiful and something good. Hebrews 12:11 says, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruits of righteousness to them which are exercised thereby. So tonight, right in this room, there are mothers who are suffering. Emotional suffering, physical suffering, but suffering because you have given and given and given and it's just kept coming, but there's been no payback. In fact, things are disappearing. And I want to show you the second characteristic tonight of Naomi. Notice at the end of chapter 1, it says, they both went until they came to Bethlehem. This was Ruth, who decided to stay with her mother-in-law. She was a Moabite. And it came about that when they came to Bethlehem and all the city was stirred because of them, the women said, is this Naomi? You know why they said that? 10 years had really taken its toll on this woman. They couldn't believe what she looked like. And she said to them, do not call me Naomi, which means pleasant, but call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. Mara means bitter. And Naomi was a mother who was bitter. By the way, it's never right to be bitter. But it's certainly understandable how some people battle bitterness. Boy, when you have given and given and given, and you have the rug pulled out from under you, you've done the best you can, and that's not good enough. There's a tremendous temptation to be bitter. To look at all the ways you've been mistreated, and to say, I got the short end. But you know, over in the book of Hebrews, these Christians were suffering. They had dedicated everything to the Lord, and they were suffering and not getting any kind of payback. And the writer, in trying to encourage them, said this. Hebrews 12, 14 and 15. Pursue peace with all men and the sanctification without which no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble and by it many be defiled. By the way, bitterness comes when you feel you have outgiven God as well as your children, your husband, somebody else. Self-pity is the root of bitterness. It's where it starts. But the interesting thing is that it spills over into other people becoming bitter. Because a bitter person, if they keep it up, everybody they talk to begins to feel that bitterness. And it's not edification. But you know, I look at Naomi there, and I say, Naomi, look at that wonderful daughter-in-law you've got. And boy, over in the book of Matthew, Naomi, it's going to show that right through your daughter-in-law, to Boaz, to Obed, to Jesse, you're going to have King David. But you know something? Naomi didn't know that. Naomi didn't have the book of Matthew. She didn't have the book of 1 Samuel. In fact, she didn't have any book. And that's the problem with suffering, is we don't know what the last chapter is. I remember one Sunday afternoon several years ago here in Norman, I was watching a Dallas Cowboy Washington Redskin football game exhibition. And man, I was a Cowboy fan, and it really hurt me when the Cowboys would be beat by the Redskins. And all of a sudden, in that first quarter, Dallas was really getting drubbed. And the announcer said something, it's like, it's a beautiful night here in Dallas. And I thought, night? It's Sunday afternoon. And then it dawned on me, hey, this game was played last night. And so real quickly, I ran and got my Sunday paper and looked up the score, and Dallas had won. And you know, I just went back in and relaxed all that first half when the Redskins were really drubbing them, because I knew Dallas was going to win. But you know, we've got the story of how we've already won. But you know, Naomi didn't have that. And a lot of times the trials in life are such that you really not sure unless you have the promises of God and your faith strong, you're not sure it's going to turn out okay. And it opens the door to bitterness and resentment. But I want you to notice that when Ruth went out and gleaned in the field, she had no idea where she was going to go, and she wound up in the field of Boaz, and he was kind to her. He told him to drop some grain. He told him to the men to stay away from that girl and let her alone out in the field. And when she came home in the afternoon and told her mother-in-law, Naomi. In 2:20, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. Again, Naomi said to her, the man is our relative and he is of our closest relative. And, you know, even in her bitterness, God was good to Naomi. And you know, I want to tell you folks something. Some of the greatest times that God comes and blesses me is when I have had a DRA. Now, my son who works in a restaurant calls that dining room attendant. But what it is dirty, rotten attitude. And sometimes I find that God moves into my life with his goodness when I have had a resentful spirit. And you see, he's doing what Romans 2:4 says. He's chastening me with his goodness that I might repent. And so Naomi was a blessed woman. She was a suffering woman, but she was a bitter woman. But God chastened her with his goodness, and she became thankful. And if you were to chart the book of Ruth, right there in verse 20 is where the whole thing turns and changes, because Naomi's attitude becomes one of gratitude. She begins to say, blessed be the Lord. She begins to be thankful. And you know that song we often sing, when upon life's billows you are tempest-tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost. Count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done. We sometimes get so close to the way people have mistreated us that we don't see how God is moving and bringing about blessing to turn chaos into something wonderful. And so she was blessed, and she says, "Blessed be the Lord." But you know, after she began to be thankful, a fourth thing was that she began to look on other people's needs instead of her own. Notice in chapter 2, verse 17. Excuse me, no, 2:17. Verse 21, let's start with verse 21. "Then Ruth the Moabitess said, 'Furthermore, you should stay close to my servants.'" This is what Boaz said, "until they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, 'It is good, my daughter, that you should go out with his maids, lest others fall upon you in the field.' So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. And then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?'" Notice this woman who was all wrapped up in her bitterness and her suffering, and the window was open when she said, "Blessed be the Lord," and she began to be thankful. But the thing begins to gain momentum in Naomi's life when she starts looking out for Ruth. I know a man told me several years ago that says, when you've got problems and you're discouraged, the worst thing in the world you can do is just sit around worrying about your problem. Go find somebody else with a problem and start helping them with their problem. And Ruth began to be helped by Naomi in how to get a husband. And so, here was a mother who finally got on top of her bitterness and began to be thankful and unselfish. And she began to look for other people who were suffering and to help them. And then notice the results. In chapter 3:18, after, as Bill explained to us this morning, after Ruth had proposed to Boaz, that Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today." Notice the faith. When she started being thankful and unselfish, God began to put faith in her heart, not only toward God, but toward other people. She began to think the best of other people. "This man will not rest until he's taken care of it." And then you notice in chapter 4, it says in verse 13, "So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. And then the woman said to Naomi, 'Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him.'" I love verse 16. It says, "Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap and became his nurse." Isn't that a beautiful ending? And we look at that, and one of the things that excites us is that that boy was going to become the grandfather of King David. And she was just happy. She was happy. She had fruit. She had what her heart desired. And you know, today, in our materialistic society, we want money, we want possessions, but in that simple rural life of early Israel, the thing that enriched people were families. When you could have children, and there was fellowship, and there was meaningful interrelationships with each other. I'm telling you, folks, we've almost lost that in America. And that was one of the greatest blessings to Jerry and me, was to get over to Africa and see how the families often care for each other. And there is a belonging, a sense of belonging. By the way, that's one of the biggest struggles that Jerry and I have gone through up in Colorado Springs, a city that's probably 10 to 15 times larger than Norman. Down here, we really sensed that you folks cared about us. We felt like you were an extended family. You were kind of aunts and uncles to our kids and grandparents to our kids. And you know, you get to a big city and everybody is so busy moving it, you feel rootless. But here is Naomi with a sense of belonging. She had a daughter-in-law. She had a son-in-law. She had a grandson who were going to take care of her. She felt secure. And by the way, God's concerned about that for you too. He wants you to have that sense of belonging. He wants you to feel a part of a family who really cares for you. And Jesus said that if you forsake and follow me, he says, I'll give you father and mother 100-fold. Sometimes the fathers and mothers that God gives you, the aunts and uncles, the cousins, are not your blood ones. I have Christians today that are far closer to me emotionally and spiritually than some of my own relatives. And I know that they would lay down their life for me. And notice these people said to Naomi, God has not left you without a redeemer today. And when they used that word, they were thinking in terms of a physical redeemer who would help take care of you and feed you in your old age. But little did they know that they were speaking prophetically that one day through David, Christ would come who would be Naomi's redeemer. But then notice how people are coming to her and saying, oh, Naomi, you're blessed. You are blessed! And of course, when we begin to come out of ourselves and thank God and try to help other people with their problems, God not only gives us faith and He not only puts us in families, but He begins to affirm us. He sends people along to say, hey, you are really blessed. And you say, yes, I know it. I know it. Boy, what a beautiful ending to a tragic beginning. Famine. Kids being married to pagans, husband dying. But God always has a future for failures. And no failure ever need be final. But the crucial point is that when we sense we're getting bitter, to start thanking God and praising Him, and looking for somebody else. I was feeling so sorry for myself last week. I was going through some deep turmoil. And then all of a sudden my friend, whose son-in-law hits a rock from 60 feet, and his father-in-law or his father commits suicide. I thought, you know, God, my problems are so small. And it really helped me to get out and comfort him. And then God comforted me. Tonight, I think, is our invitation. If you're here without Christ, He's your Redeemer too. And just like the lion came right down from Naomi and Obed and Jesse and David and right on down to Jesus, you know, you're out there separated from that beautiful lineage of all those that are going to heaven. Plus having heaven on earth in joy and peace, along with suffering. But tonight, God can do a wonderful work in your life right there where you're sitting. He can come in and transform your life. But you know, a lot of us here, we've been transformed. We've been born again. But we need a transformation of our attitudes. We need to develop thankfulness and selflessness. As we sing our invitation tonight, let's let it be a time of recommitment.